I've been thinking, Selwyn, why don't you go first?
Yeah, it's a bit of a heavy issue, really. I make no apologies for it, though. I guess most of us are well aware that, you know, our foreign affairs ministry would be really following this issue that's deteriorating over in West Papua. Violence is spreading, and the society is becoming more, you know, separate, apart, and et cetera, et cetera. It's also apparent, too, that groups that are monitoring that kind of security situation have done for a long time, particularly in West Papua, have also contacted the Prime Minister, urging her to speak up on the situation in the Indonesian-controlled state. Now, I agree with that sentiment. I think that we do not want, as a country, to fall back on what we did in 1999 when the same situation was deteriorating in East Timor. When New Zealand sat there, we were preoccupied with APEC. We did not get engaged on this issue from the point of view of taking the opportunity with people who trusted
this. Until very late in the piece.
Until late in the piece. Yeah. Now, what that late in the piece was APEC was in New Zealand that particular year. Bill Clinton was on his way over. You had Vladimir Putin standing in for Boris Yeltsin. You had Abuji, who was the Prime Minister of Japan at the time, and they forced New Zealand government to hold a meeting at the Auckland Town Hall. And out of that was the beginnings of a multilateral response to the massacres that killed thousands and thousands of people in Dili, the capital of East Timor. Now, I'm not suggesting it's on that scale in West Papua at the moment, but all the evidence is suggesting it's heading that way. And I think to myself, we've got a Prime Minister who has a lot of sway and a lot of respect overseas. There's an opportunity that's within our region for our government to stand up and say, on human rights principles, this situation needs a multilateral response to solve.
We need some sort of government response on that, the issue of West Papua there. All right, Verity Johnson, I've been thinking.
Well, I've been a bit preoccupied, as I'm sure a lot of people have been, with Brexit and the cacophony of noise and sound and excitement, which has happened since Boris Johnson came to power. And the more I've been thinking about it, the more I've realised that Boris Johnson's entire rise to fame and his shoehorning into government would never have happened if he was a chick. And it makes me think about how he gets so much leeway. Like, you think about it, right? Like, this is a man who has multiple kids to multiple different women and has never really wanted to talk about it. And, like, man, I get slut shame for wearing ripped jeans. You couldn't imagine me running for Parliament and having, you know, like, three kids to three different lovers and having multiple affairs whilst in marriages and then getting divorced and getting a lover and stuff. I mean, it's just, it's insane. But it's also like he seems to have this magnetic charm over people who are looking for a strongman leader. And I find that such an outdated concept, especially when Jacinda Ardern showed such a good example of like compassionate, empathetic, powerful leadership and female leadership, more if you want to attribute that to more feminine traits. So I think that Boris Johnson's rise to power is such an arcane factor. It's such a throwback.
You're trying to get your head around it.
Yeah, it just baffles me, but it also makes me feel like I feel like it's a huge double standard there because I wouldn't have been able to do that.
I mean, is it because if you wear a hairdo like a mop, you're going to get popularity or something because you're breaking outside the mould?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to be continuing that discussion and a whole lot more after the 4 o'clock news on Tuesday's panel with Selwyn Manning and Verity Johnson this afternoon. I'm Ross Chapman. See you very, very shortly.